Fred and Jeff and John are the three horsemen. They never get along, they're the three horsemen. They argue about science fiction and fantasy. Fred and Jeff and John are the three horsemen. Ride, horsemen, ride!
And good evening, afternoon, or morning to you all. This is the Three Horsemen podcast with part two, which means this is now the epic episode 50 of our run. And once again, joining me are my co-host, Mr. Jeff Patterson.
Hey.
And my other co-host, Mr. John Stevens, is here in spirit, if not in body. And returning to us again are Paul.
Hi there.
And Patrick.
What's a podcast?
Well, you've edited about 5,000 of them, so I hope you know by now.
Yeah, some awards and stuff, too.
Yep. Something with a rocket on it or something.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, we're back, and we're going to talk about culture consumed, with thanks once again to Galactic Suburbia for their trademark term. So, who would like to go first about what you've consumed?
I've got a list.
I'm sure you do.
Is it a little list that won't be missed?
Yeah, little list. Actually have been getting quite a bit of reading done this year, more so than I was reading last year. I was digging into the past a little bit and rereading all my Gerald Kershaw, Clock Without Hands and Night in the City. They led me immediately to rediscovering Cecilia Holland history books that she wrote. Mm-hmm. About Rome and the Borgias. So I reread City of God and Jerusalem. And a couple other things that more recent that I read were, and I talk about this at the end of last year, but Russell Blackford, the author and philosopher, put a book out called Science Fiction and the Moral Imagination. And this is a good view of, he talks about a lot of classic stuff, talks about some fairly modern stuff as well. He covers a lot of books, alien moralities and human enhancement and the whole idea of the renegade and the mutant and the outsider and role responsibility plays in the course of it. But it was very, very thought-provoking work and came away with some pretty funky thoughts as I was reading it. The other thing that is new, which I wouldn't have known about if not for Mr. Damian Walter, actually, is the new M. John Harrison collection, You Should Come With Me Now. And I think this book may have gone over my head a little bit. I'm a huge M. John Harrison fan. I love the Vikronium novels. I love the Empty Space novels. Mm-hmm. These stories tended to be more snippets, and they had a little touch of surrealism to them, which I really enjoyed. Don't get me wrong. I really, really enjoyed them. I'm just not certain I caught any on-running theme through the course of them. I'm probably going to reread the book. Beautifully written. I'm just not certain I got the point of it. I got around to Jonathan Strahan's Infinity Wars, the one book of his that I had not read, and that was very enjoyable.
Was that the 2017 one?
Yes. But he had mentioned that he had just finished work on an anthology of R.A. Lafferty stories, which immediately sent me to my Lafferty books, and I reread Arrive at Easter Wine and 900 Grandmothers. And
I've got a couple volumes that were recently published, but they were expensive.
Ooh. I can imagine.
This is a new publication, and I forget which press it was, but it was really, really over the top. It was Centipede, maybe.
Hmm.
So any affordable stuff from, especially under that guiding hand, will be nice.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, but Jonathan said that the last Infinity book is coming.
Yep, that's due out this year, I believe.
So, I hope he takes under another project, because I really love those books.
Yeah, when he posted the cover sheet or the title page to the Lafferty book on social media, about a month ago led to all kinds of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Reading a bunch of comics, nothing's really standing out that I haven't really talked about before. Saga is still good. All of the Marvel, current Marvel and DC crossovers are just a bloody mess. I can't even bring myself to talk about them. There is a bit of TV that I want to talk about, though. Counterpart, number one, the J.K. Simmons series. Counterpart was amazing. I did not expect that show to be as good as it was. And Simmons does such a good job in it as a not just acting via dialogue, but physically acting through the course of the show.
Which network?
Stars, I believe. I have been watching Krypton, which is way better than I expected. It has been consistently delivering some very science fictional concepts on a weekly basis, and also giving us some characters which you thought were going to be minor characters, and giving them some narrative heft that I really wasn't expecting. So that's been really, really good, and I think everyone's doing a really good job on it. I watched The Terror. I got to see all 10 episodes of The Terror. I got to see that. I thought it was good. I thought it was a very good adaptation. I thought they didn't stick the landing when it came to the end. I think watered down the ending a touch. But not as badly as the ending of The City in the City, based on the China Mieville novel. I thought that series, I got to see all the episodes of that, I thought that was excellent adaptation. They really defanged the climax, in my eyes, which is too bad, because I felt the same way about when I watched Annihilation. I was like, wow, you really didn't get the ending of this at all, did you? I mean, they were good and very well made, everything across the board. I just think somebody read the ending and said, let's change it. I know Patrick probably has something to say about the new Lost in Space.
I like it.
Which I call Earth 2 meets the Iron Giant. number one, Parker Posey is amazing in it. Her take on the character as much as I did. And that's pretty much all I got.
Okay. Patrick?
Yes?
Would you like to discuss some of the things you've seen, starting with Annihilation?
Do you want books?
Whatever you want to do.
So I consume books through audio, right? I don't buy physical books much anymore.
Is that really reading, though?
Yeah, I think it is. So I recently decided that I wanted to go through all the Wheel of Time books on audio, so I did.
Wow.
Yep, all of them.
In 1 year? This year?
Yep.
Wow.
I did the first three books in the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences series from Pip Ballantyne and T. Morris.
Mm-hmm.
I love those. Those are steampunk. I've done Persepolis Rising by James S.A. Corey, which is an awesome book. And it took that whole universe in a different direction than I was expecting. You know, they changed some stuff, and I like it. So, there. The first Alex Viris novel called Faded by Benedict Jacka. Listen to that one. That was interesting. Urban fantasy set in London. And it was all right. It was good. I mean, it was well written. It was kind of an interesting story, but I don't think I'll pick up any more of those.
Set today or the 1920?
Yeah. Okay. No, kind of now. He in even the character even mentions that he's not aware of many practitioners of magic who are out in the open and doing stuff. He's heard of a guy in Chicago that does it. So, you know, that was an interesting kind of moment in that. So that was like the interesting moment for me. It was good, but not my thing.
There's so much urban fantasy set in London at this point.
Yeah.
You really got to stand out.
Yeah. Pilot X by Tom Merritt, which to me is a love letter to Doctor Who. a big time love letter to Doctor Who. And I think that he even says that somewhere, right? But it's an interesting story. Basically, the character is Pilot X. And there's times when the character is Citizen X, Professor X, but at its heart is Pilot X and has a time machine. So, yeah, a good, very well written. Love Tom. Tom's a great guy. Probably worth your time to check it out. Rendezvous with Rama. So this is one that you guys will probably be all, ooh, wow, you read Arthur C. Clarke. And yes, I did. It's a book.
Patrick.
I got through it. Paper?
No, I got through it.
And?
I think that's his review.
Yeah, I can now say I got through it.
Okay.
The Cold Dish. Walt Longmire novel by Craig Johnson. That one was interesting because I actually watched the entire Longmire series, which they finished on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And so once I finished it, I decided at that point I wanted to go and read one of the books because I had seen some stuff that like people didn't like the way that it was adapted. And I didn't want to kind of get mired in that because I was enjoying the television show. And I still say it's a great show. So I kind of waited. And once it was over, I went and did the first book, and I loved it. I thought it was a great book. And I could see where they changed some stuff, and I could see where they kept some stuff for the show. But, yeah, as far as mysteries go, I thought it was pretty good. I liked it.
Have you watched Happen Leonard?
I have seen the first few episodes of Happen Leonard. The problem there is that I read the first book. And so the changes did bug me a little bit. Mm-hmm. I've also met the author, Lansdale. Mm-hmm. And he is the definition of a hoot.
Yeah, he is.
And getting to talk to him and at Pikes Peak Writers Conference a couple years ago, he was entertaining. It was him and Jeff Lindsay together, and you kind of get a couple of Southern boys together, and we had a Southern off at one point, where we were all just trying to use Southernisms to top each other, which was kind of funny. And but he loved the casting of Happen Leonard, and he said that he can't imagine anybody other than Purefoy in the role at this point.
Yeah, and, I agree.
Which was interesting. I saw the first couple of episodes, but because it was on Sundance Channel, I think, I kind of lost track of it. And I know it's now on Netflix. I probably just need to catch up on it.
I mean, I like it. And I also, speaking of writers, I mean, he's a good example. I mean, he'll write in fantasy with like Boba Hotep. He'll write straight mystery. He'll write zombies. He'll write military. It's all Joe Lansdale. Mm-hmm. It's not Joe Lansdale and five pseudonyms. Another example, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Yep. Sometimes, legitimately, a author is so prolific that the publisher refuses or can't put out everything that they write. And at that point, they will suggest a pseudonym.
Oh, sure.
And to put the other stuff out under the pseudonym. So that's one of those areas where that actually happens. Mm-hmm. I also just finished the Iron Druid series by Kevin Hearn. The final book is called Scourged. And that was really good. I enjoyed that. It paid off for everything that it's been building up to. And then I listened to The Squirrel on the Train.
Okay.
Which, if you're not aware of this, there are a couple of books set in the Iron Druid universe that are called the Oberon Meaty Mysteries. Mm-hmm. And it's all from Oberon's point of view, the dog, the Irish wolfhound. Mm-hmm. And it's about him and Atticus and Orla and Starbuck and a couple other dogs, hounds, solving mysteries. And in the case of The Squirrel and the Train, Atticus is going to take the hounds to Portland, not Portland, because Oberon says Portland. And when they get to the train station, they are mortified to learn that there is a squirrel on top of the train. And they're also mortified because Atticus isn't taking it seriously. And the danger that's associated with a squirrel. And Atticus convinces them not to worry about it because a squirrel can't possibly stay on the train at the speeds that it's going to go at because physics will kill it. And they're like, ooh, physics must be really powerful. And then when they get to Portland, again, to their horror, the squirrel is still on top of the train, which kicks off the entire mystery. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely hilarious. I did have a quote, which I can probably find because I sent it around to enough people. And it because it just tripped me out. Where is it here? Ah, here we go. Let me see if I can do the voice appropriately for you. I don't understand why humans tend to fear clowns more than squirrels. Atticus says it's probably all Stephen King's fault, which doesn't make sense to me, but I'm sure he's right. That still doesn't explain why people are ignoring the mountains of evidence that squirrels have a sinister agenda and the ability and the agility to carry it out.
I think you've got another career there, Patrick.
Yep.
Hearn's a good writer. Have you read his Plague of Giants yet, Patrick?
I have not, and I want to do that, and I also want to read Kill the Farm Boy.
Yeah, so do I with Delilah Dawson. Yeah.
Delilah Dawson. Yeah, he's really good. He was local here for a little while, so I got to hang out with him at a couple of different conventions and have dinner with him. He is also just a wonderful and genuine human being. So a great guy. Love his work. Love his writing. Can't wait to see what he does next at this point. I also decided that I wanted to listen to the audio versions of the Dresden Files. So I've already gone through Stormfront, which is book one. And now I just finished, actually last night as I was driving home at 2 a.m., Full Moon, which are done by Spike from Buffy. And I absolutely love them. So those are the books that I've been doing. As far as TV, I was telling you, Jeff, and you, Fred, The Tick on Amazon Prime, the new Tick,
right,
is fantastic. Love it.
I haven't seen that yet.
That is an awesome, awesome show. I just love the way they're doing it. Love the, because it feels more like the original material, mm-hmm, to me than some of the stuff they've done in the past. Not to ding Patrick Warburton. I think he did a great live action Tick, but the new guy is awesome. Just love him. As Jeff mentioned, I do love Lost in Space. I think it's a great show. Altered Carbon.
Oh,
another
God.
Great show.
Oh, God.
I know.
I forgot about that.
I didn't. Great show. Love it. Battlestar Galactica is now available to stream for free if you're a Prime member on Amazon.
Right.
Kind mm-hmm. of been going back through those a little bit. Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
That's now on Netflix. Check it out. It's hilarious. And then there's a documentary on Netflix that I have been working my way through, and it's called Wild, Wild Country. Are you familiar with that?
No.
No.
Do you remember when a cult bought a ranch in Oregon in the late 70s and started to build a city?
Oh, yeah. Vaguely, yeah.
That's what this is about.
Wow.
The Rajneesh. It was right after Jonestown
mm-hmm.
happened. And they were basically, they were based out of India, and there were threats against them, and it was starting to get bad. And so they lifted up the entire cult and moved to Oregon. And they bought a ranch out in the middle of nowhere with the intention of turning it into a city. And then that got them in trouble with zoning laws. So then they started buying houses in the local town that was nearby, moving into the houses. Then they got enough people to vote them onto the city council to try to change the laws, and they basically took over the whole town.
Mm-hmm.
Then when the state kind of started to try to stop them, they shipped in a bunch of homeless people from across America in order to vote in the county elections to get them. I mean, it's just, you're sitting there staring at this and you're going, this happened. This is real. The one of the leaders, the kind of the female spokesperson, she was the face of it. She was not the guy, I forget what they called him, but the cult leader himself, she wasn't that figure, but she was like the public figure. She was on Nightline with Ted Koppel. She was on Phil Donahue. She was on all the talk shows of the day. They had her on like Merv Griffin, and she just was the face of everything. And I don't remember any of this. I think I was just too young. Fred probably remembers it because it would have been what, your 30s?
Possibly. But I do remember this was covered like on This American Life or something a year or two ago. And it might have been the people doing the documentary at that point.
It's just
bizarre.
When we talk about fiction and the stories that engage us, you're blown away by watching this. And I started watching this because of Angie Hodapp, who is part of Nelson Literary Agency. And she posted on social media that she watched it with her husband, and they were blown away and they couldn't believe it, because it sounds like fiction, but it actually happened. Mm-hmm. Check it out.
Yeah, I'm writing it down.
And that's it?
That's it.
Okay, for me, 2016 pretty much stank when it came to culture consumed. 2017 was worse. 2018, I'm hoping to get back on track, but we'll see. For books, I reread The Goblin Reservation by Clifford Simak, which is probably the first Simak I ever read and still one of my favorites. I read The Persistence of Vision, which is a short story collection by John Varley, and also part of a second collection by Varley. And he was somebody I started reading when he first started appearing in fantasy and science fiction. But upon rereading these stories, I find a lot of stuff that really bugs me about them. Anybody else read him?
Not in a long while.
No. Well, he seems to be fascinated with 13 and 14-year-old girls.
Oh.
So,
you know, that's kind of funny, because I was just talking to a friend of mine, a female friend, who said that she had lunch with someone who was telling her about all these books. Same kind of concept. Like every single book, it drills down to someone being obsessed with teenage girls.
Yep.
That's a disturbing trend, in my opinion.
I mean, you've got so much about these that were groundbreaking at the time. I mean, people swap sexes. You know, there's like no boundaries as far as that's concerned, but the boundary between ages still seems to be, you know, maybe I just noticed it more than I did back then, because yeah. I was a 14-year-old boy.
Your perceptions change.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
lens that you see these things through change as well.
Right. So I'm reading these again because he's finally finishing the so-called Iron or Metals trilogy with a new book later this year. So I'm going to get to the Ophiuchi Vision, or sorry, the Ophiuchi Hotline, and then the two Metals books that are already out, and then the new one when it comes out. Hopefully I get through the whole series this year. Then I also read, continuing my journey through Roger Zelazny again, a book called Road Marks, which I believe, Paul, you've read?
Oh, yes. Road Marks is most excellent.
Yeah, okay.
Good book.
I mean, I'm still deciding whether I like it or not, even though it came out in 1984, thereabouts. So yeah, I've read it several times, but each time I'm just like, you know, it always surprises me. So I never expect it to go where it goes. And then last night I finished the deluxe edition of Global Frequency by Mr. Warren Ellis. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the Three Horsemen will return someday with another Warren Ellis episode. And that one was kind of interesting because he's now doing Injection. So this is almost like a non-supernatural prequel to Injection, I think. You know, you've got these hyper-competent people dealing with odd events. And
that reminds me, you said Supernatural. There is one other thing. If you haven't seen it, if you've never watched any episodes of Supernatural, check out Scooby Natural. This is the Supernatural Scooby-Doo crossover where Dean and Sam Winchester get sucked into the television into a Scooby-Doo cartoon.
Wow.
Oh my.
Yes. It's hilarious.
Okay. That sounds weird. Almost as weird as Harlan Ellison showing up in Scooby-Doo.
Or Neil Gaiman on The Big Bang Theory.
Well, that was actually kind of amusing. You know, many, many years ago when SF Signal was a thing and when John DiNardo was hot on my competition, we would do this, you know, we would both try to read a science fiction story a day.
Hi-oh.
So I'm kind of off the wagon with that, but I've still managed to get through 75 shorts so far this year. So, but that's the easy kind of thing to catch up on. So once I get back in the short stories, I'll get back into that and the count will go up. But
Easily like 85 more than I've read.
Well,
yeah.
You've gone through. I mean, if you were reading all those, listening to all those audiobooks while walking, I'm sure your Fitbit count would be quite high.
Usually while driving.
Yep. Okay. But one set that I've been working on is I think it's Open Road Media did all of Clifford Simak's short stories, so I've been working through those collections. And some of the highlights include, I mean, The Big Front Yard, Over the River and Through the Woods, which is kind of an interesting one if you ever read Zena Henderson's The People series. It's a good reflection of that. And then there's The Grotto of the Dancing Deer, which I think won the Nebula and or the Hugo. And New Folks Home. And one of my favorites is called The Thing in the Stone. Mm-hmm. So it's been a good visit. On graphics, I very stupidly at some point lost the file in which I was keeping track of everything I read this year. So I'm still reconstructing that, but some of the titles I've been working on have been Wayward, which is Jim Zub. I think it's the 2015 edition of Doctor Strange, which I started reading after watching the movie finally. And then, of course, various Star Wars titles. I'm very sadly behind on Dr. Aphra, though. I still wish, I hope they work her into the movies at some point or one of the TV series. I'd love to see her there. And TV, of course, The Expanse, watching that. Kind of watching a lot of spy type stuff, including one called Collateral, which is on Netflix. It's a limited series of like six or so episodes.
I added that to my list. I haven't looked at it yet.
I mean, if you like John Le Carre kind of stuff, I think you'll like it.
I also added the Frankenstein one. Have you seen that?
No.
On Netflix with Sean Bean.
Nope. I'll add that definitely.
Yeah, that looks like some sort of what's the one with the werewolf and the Frankenstein and.
You talking about Van Helsing?
No.
Abbott and Costello.
No, the TV show with the Dracula's girlfriend's father's in it and her stepsister.
What?
Oh, God. You know that show I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know the one you mean. I just can't think of its name.
Penny Dreadful. It feels like something like that. Like this guy is there's something to do with Frankenstein. It's the Frankenstein mysteries or murders or something like that. Mm. And Sean Bean is the main character. It looks really good. I added that to my list, too. Go ahead.
Well, if you like Collateral, once you try it, on BBC America, there's one called Killing Eve, which looks very similar. And then, since my wife has been out of work, so therefore watching a lot of TV, mostly watching a lot of her stuff, And one show that we really liked is something called Doc Martin.
Oh, yeah.
Which is British and has been on for, I think it's the 8th season at this point. But he's just a hilarious character. And then movies, we saw The Wrinkle in Time, which we all really enjoyed.
You're about the only ones.
Hmm?
You're about the only ones.
Well, I don't know. We really, really thought it was a good effort. My wife and daughter saw Black Panther. I haven't seen it yet.
Wakanda Forever.
And around that time when they saw that, we also rented Thor, Ragnarok, and Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange is a terrible movie, but Thor Ragnarok was awesome.
I liked it. You know, it had problems, but there were parts that I liked too.
We fought? You and I, we fought? Did I win? No. I beat you easily.
Oh, one thing that I have to find a link for, and everyone should watch. Have you seen the Brady Bunch edition of for the Marvel Universe?
Yes, I watched that last night. Yeah. The Marvel Bunch.
Seek it out. Yeah, the Marvel Bunch. It's hilarious. Utterly hilarious. They do the song with all the stars from the various movies.
Oh, I have to go looking for this.
Yeah, it's real short. It's just the opening theme, but it's really good.
Yep. And that's about it for me. So what about you, John Stevens? Well, I've been Chinese hermit for our poetry. No, we kid, but John, I hope you listen to this episode when we drop it. And we miss you, buddy.
Yeah. I got to meet John in 2016 as I was sweeping away through the Northeast. I got to meet him in his bookstore lair. It was great.
His native habitat.
His native habitat. I bought a book for him.
So, final thoughts?
Oh, time out. So I don't get to do a culture consume?
Yeah, about to say.
Sorry, Paul.
Cut that part. They're
you got it.
That's the problem with having too many guests. Okay.
Screw you, Paul. We're going home.
Paul?
Culture consumed? Sure. I will start with the digital media first because that'll be much shorter. I recently got a new TV, which means I can actually, and since I have Netflix subscription, I can actually watch stuff on Netflix on my television, which is surprise. Wow. So one series I managed to do a deep dive in and I recently just finished is called Travelers. Mm-hmm. Have you watched it?
Canada.
It stars Will from Will and Grace. The premise of the series is basically from the future, people have time traveled into the present, into the bodies of people who are about to die. Their goal is to change history so that history doesn't go into the death spiral that they've come from. And, well, things don't go anywhere near what they expected. It's a really interesting cast. Really interesting problems. They do have to do some contrivances to keep the plot going, at least keep the cast that they have. So you have people who are interacting in the present with the people who have come from the future, and then they themselves wind up getting possessed themselves just so they can keep the fiction of and the fictional distance going so they can keep using the same actors. But aside from that problem, there's some really excellent episodes. 17 Minutes, which is an episode in the second season where a mission goes horribly wrong, and due to the constraints of how time travel and sending people into the past works, gets replayed, but not replayed quite the way you'd expect. It's not quite an endless loop like, say, from Star Trek. It's a different way of trying to do something from the future into the past again and again. It's really excellent television. I understand there will be a third season, and I'm on Netflix, and I'm fully on board for seeing that. Because I'm on SSF Audio, one of the podcasts I'm on, we do a lot of Philip K. Dick. We've been doing some of these stories that have been adapted into screen on Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. I've only seen four of those episodes, which the four first episodes, which... The odd thing about them is it's a British production, and Philip K. Dick is such an American writer to have these to have British adaptations, basically, of Philip K. Dick episodes sometimes feels a little off. Like The Commuter, for example, feels like a very strange story done British style. I mean, The Impossible Planet is fine because that's out in space, but a couple of the stories just feel oddly transplanted out of Philip K. Dick's America and into England, and I'm not quite sure they work so well. But we're going through those as we're going through the story, actually listening and talking about the stories on that podcast. So I will continue to watch the series because we keep penciling them in.
Which podcast is this?
SSF Audio at sffaudio.com, which basically we talk about audiobooks because I need more outlets to talk about audiobooks. Or no, I don't, but it's a good excuse to read more books. I did also see Altered Carbon because we wanted to talk about the book, and so I saw the series. I'm not sure it's an effective adaptation. Some of the changes they make, I think, are good. They do collapse a couple characters in a way that streamlines the story, but I'm not. And I did appreciate the AI hotel being Edgar Allan Poe. I thought that was an interesting touch rather than have. I think it was Jim Morrison that was in the novel. But I have Edgar Allan Poe as the hotel. I thought it was a really nice touch, and I liked that a lot.
I did too.
But that's about. I did see Black Panther. I liked Black Panther. I have not yet seen Infinity War as of this recording. I know you have, Patrick. But I have seen Spider-Man Homecoming, so I'm caught up with all the Marvel except for Infinity War as of the recording of this podcast. So I should probably switch to books at this point. And I read a lot. I listen to audiobooks. I read books. I go through a lot. So I will go backwards from what I most recently read. So the most relevant. I do mix in some classics because I do that for SF Audio, and occasionally I'll do a piece for Tor. So. But it's mostly new stuff. I most recently read Witch Mark by C.L. Polk that hasn't come out yet as of this recording, although the first 11 chapters have been released separately for free, which you can get on Amazon and other places. It's a secondary world fantasy. Feels like turn of the century, except this world decided to go heavily into bicycles. So there's bicycle punk is not quite the thing, but there is a bicycle chase in the middle of this novel. There's a bicycle chase in the middle of this novel, which is kind of hilarious. There's bicycles and horse-drawn characters, and that's the level of that sort of technology. There's magic, but magic for only the upper classes, the low classes. It's considered witchcraft, and people like that are thrown into asylums. The main character is a runaway from the upper classes who decided to become an army surgeon. He's come back from the war and is basically hiding from his family and also hiding from his own gifts because, well, surprise, he can do magic, but he's not as good as his sister who can control storms and such, but needs people like him to basically drain power off of, which that's not the kind of life he wants. He wants to help people. He wants to heal. And so there's a real narrative tension between him, his sister. There is a male-male romance with a basically, they call it an Amarathine, but it's basically an elf. And the elf is here investigating a mystery of his own. There's murder mysteries. It's a really interesting world building, really rich descriptive writing, and some strong central characters. I really enjoyed it. I most recently listened audio to Alien Out of the Shadows by Tim Laban. Tim Laban most recently wrote a space opera called The Wrong Stars for Angry Robot. I haven't read it yet. Alien Out of the Shadows.
Angry Robot.
Thank you, Patrick. I knew you were going to do that. Alien Out of the Shadows basically takes place between the first two Alien movies. And so by convention, there has to be a research button because Ripley is involved. And, well, she doesn't remember any events of this story. But it's a bottle episode where a mining ship winds up finding aliens on an asteroid that's being mined, and Ripley's capsule from the Nostromo gets mixed up in things. And so it's Ripley and these, and the ship versus the aliens. And so it is exactly what it is on the tin. It has a really good audio cast. It's one of the full audio cast dramas. It's got Rucka Hauer as Ash. So I thought that was a really excellent choice. I've read plenty more. Fire Dance by Alana C. Meyer. This is a follow-up to her original Last Song Before Night, which I reviewed years ago on SF Signal. Fire Dance takes our main character, Lynn, and takes her to another part of the world where there's the threat of war and people possibly using dangerous magic. And Lynn herself has a shortened lifespan. And so she's trying to get stuff done before basically she dies. We also have stuff going back on at the Academy because with the eruption of magic in the world, which happened in the first novel, things have kind of gone unstable. And again, this is a novel not so much for plot. This is a novel for character and especially for the gorgeousness of her writing. Alana C. Meyer really writes well, and it's words that just carry me away into the novel each time I read her work, and I really enjoyed it.
We just recorded an episode of Functional Nerds with her.
Excellent. She is a friend. I got to meet her on my last trip to New York, and she's excellent people, and I'm happy to talk about her work because I really, really enjoy it.
We had a clause. We said you can't do any Skippy and Fanti episodes ever to come on. So she signed that contract. So
damn you, Patrick. rivals, I tell you, rivals. The most recent classic SF I read, which was for SF Audio, is Robert Forward's Dragon Egg. Dragon's Egg. I had read this before none of the rest of the people on the podcast had, so they were delighted. I kind of suggested this after we had previously done Mission of Gravity. So Dragon's Egg basically is about the story of a civilization arising on a neutron star and the Earth expedition that goes out to meet it. It is classic hard science fiction. The human characters are kind of boring and faceless. It's the ideas that really drive this novel, and the idea and the whole suite of civilization that we see on the neutron star, because they live so much faster. We basically see them from the Stone Age to when they surpass the humans in technology. And it is one of my favorites, and listening to it on audio reaffirmed that this is one of my central science fiction novels that still holds up years later. I could talk about books all day. I'll just miss titles I recently read. Serpent and Heather by Kay Kenyon, which is a follow-up second in her series of spies with magical powers in pre-World War II. Like that a lot. Dragon Road by Joseph Brassey, which is a follow-up to Skyfarer by Joseph Brassey, which basically has floating islands and an endless sky. It's very Star Wars magic-y, skyships, magic, battles, adventure, some humor, all sorts of good stuff. The Poppy War by R.F. Kuang, that comes out in a few days as of this recording. It is really dark fantasy set in basically 1920s sort of China. You have the Japanese about to start a war with China. You have a falling apart country and a young woman who doesn't want to live in the little village she has and be the wife of a drug dealer. So she decides to go for an academy scholarship and finds out that she has the power to contact a god. And there is magic deep within the world. And well, that magic always has costs. It's a really grim book in the last third because she goes full on second Sino-Japanese War. And it's dark, but it's really, really good. And I really encourage readers to go seek that out if you can handle that. And one last thing I want to mention is the cereal box Born to the Blade. The second episode is out as of this, but I've gotten to read the entire series. Mike Underwood has a talented cast along him writing Cassandra Clare, Malka Older, and Marie Brennan. It's basically floating islands, diplomacy, magic, swords. It's like Babylon 5 set in a fantasy universe, and it's absolutely delicious.
What do you mean by cereal box?
Cereal box is the outfit that does.
Are you freaking kidding me? You don't know cereal box?
I'm playing to the wider audience.
Explains the wider audience. Cereal Box is an outfit that does that sells cereal stories. They come out each and every week. It's kind of like the old style format of just dribbling out content week after week. Although they eventually do collect stuff at the end into anthology books. So they have a number of series out there, Tremontaine, which is based on the Ellen Kushner and Delia Sherman novels. There's the Book Burners, which Max Leadstone runs, which is about Vatican spies in the urban fantasy setting. There's a few others, and this is the newest one is this epic fantasy on floating islands, Born to the Blade. I've been reading a bunch of floating island stuff lately. Apparently, I don't know what's with that, but it's good stuff.
It's bigger than Bicycle Punk.
It is currently bigger than Bicycle Punk.
Islands in the sea. Oh, no.
That is what we are, Patrick.
Oh,
yes,
no.
But there's plenty of good stuff coming out that hasn't been released yet as of this reading that I've gotten to read because authors do like me. Gate Crashers by Patrick Tomlinson, which is very funny, schlock mercenary kind of funny. Fred, sort of space opera about first contact. There's also A Study in Honor by Claire O'Dell, who's really Beth Brnovich, which is one of those Sherlock Holmes versions, except both Holmes and Watson are African-American women set in the near future after the U.S. has now fallen into a civil war. And that's really, really good stuff as well. I did get to reread Annihilation by Jeff Vandermeer because we want to talk about that and the movie for the podcast. I think you're right, Jeff. The ending of the movie doesn't quite work. It's gorgeous to look at. It's really good visuals, but I'm not sure I think it all hangs together as well.
It's the last story that needed a Hollywood ending, and it got a Hollywood ending.
It got a Hollywood ending, but. As of this reading, I have consumed, not so great. I've only consumed 49 books so far this year, so I'm way behind Sarah Chorn's. So, I'm doing my best.
Okay,
well, I'll stop there.
Pretty impressive.
Your efforts are appreciated.
Yes. Wow.
Hey, Fred, I forgot you wanted me to talk about Kickstarter.
Oh, if you sure, let's go for it.
I'll just throw it out there really quick. The problem with Kickstarter is Lou Anders.
Why is Lou Anders a problem?
Because I get emails from Kickstarter that says, your friend Lou Anders just backed ... So I, if people aren't familiar with the concept of Kickstarter, because apparently they don't own a cereal box, this is a place where people can go.
Did you hear me rolling my eyes?
Yes. And they can say, this is the project we want to do, and if you give us X amount of dollars, we'll do it. And then you get whatever the project is. A lot of really cool games are being done this way. And there's actually two problems with Kickstarter. One was Lou, and the other one was Giles from Beyond the Trope, the podcast Beyond the Trope, invited me over to his friend's house to play a board game. And I go over there, and they're playing this game, and the game was really, really cool. And I enjoyed it so much that when I left, I'm like, man, I got to get that game. So I search, and I find out it's only available through Kickstarter. They have zero plans to ever sell it retail. And they did a Kickstarter for it, and that was it. And then there was so much demand for it, they decided to do a second edition and an expansion. And I happened to get in on that Kickstarter, and the game is called The Seventh Continent, or Seventh Continent.
Right.
And it's essentially a tile game, if you're familiar with those. It's almost like a choose-your-own-adventure. You have cards that you place out, and then around the edges of the cards sometimes are different numbers. You bring out those, and as your team is exploring, you flip the cards, and you have to do the activities on the cards in order to kind of explore this continent. And your goal is that you have already been to the continent, and when you came back, it's like 1920s, when you came back, you didn't realize that you had been cursed, and now you have to break the curse or die. And the game, just to give you some scale and scope, has, I want to say, 1,400 cards in it. Yeah, and then they just did an expansion as well. So I backed that. I got the second edition Seventh Continent, and I'm getting the expansion. They shipped it in two waves. So wave one was anybody who didn't already have the base game, here's the base game. Wave two is for everybody else, here's the expansion stuff. And one of the things you could do, which Jeremy, Giles' friend, did, was you could get sleeves for all 1,400 cards.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. To me, that was like too much work. Because I remember bagging and boarding all my comics. That was not fun. I didn't want to go through that again. So I didn't get the sleeves. But like that was a project. And the characters that you play, it's like you are Victor Frankenstein or you are H.P. Lovecraft. And they've got like different characters that you can pick. Each character has specific skills. As an example, I got to play Frankenstein. And we came across a graveyard. And of course, I animated the body and created Frankenstein's monster. So stuff like that. It's a really fun game. Lots of different ways to play it. Lots of replayability. There's other stuff like that on Kickstarter too. I backed The Reckoners by, I think it's Nauvoo Games. And this is based on Sanderson's books, the superhero books. Mm-hmm. And as an example, Seventh Continent needed, I want to say, 60 grand, 70 grand, something like that, to produce the second edition of Seventh Continent. And I want to say they got a million something. Nauvoo Games, same thing. They wanted 60, 70 grand, and they're in the 500,000 range, something like that. Something stupid, ridiculous. And you typically get a ton of extras with it. So with the Reckoners, they're giving away special figurines that go with the game. They're giving away painted figurines. They're giving away extra cards to play the game, extra characters, all this kind of stuff. That one I haven't gotten yet, but it's a kind of a cool concept. If you're into role-playing games, board games, there's usually a ton of stuff going on. There's even video games that are being backed. Another project that I backed because of Lou Anders was the Elder Dice project, which is basically just Cthulhu-inspired dice for role-playing games.
Not Cthulhu Dice? Elder Dice?
This was specifically Elder Dice.
So I got the Cthulhu Dice one.
Elder Dice Unspeakable Tome. Mm-hmm. That was the project. And they actually, they funded to the level where they are giving you books, Elder Tomes, that you can put your dice in.
Oh, wow.
And then you open them up and you can pull them out. So it's kind of a cool, neat little thing. I backed that one. I also backed, do you know Michael J. Sullivan and his Rhaera Chronicles?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Dabble Brothers did the death of Dolgarth, one of the novellas in the Rhaera Chronicles. One of the early ones, I think, or set early in the timeline. They did a Kickstarter for that, for a graphic novel, and that funded. So I'm waiting on that one to come through. So lots of cool different things. People kickstart books there. They kickstart games, video games, board games, role-playing games, dice, miniatures. There's been, like, I play Dresden Files RPG, another kind of fate-based game. There's been lots of, you know, fate coins and all that kind of stuff. All that extra stuff that you use to kind of do gaming has been on there. And they tend to fund really quickly. And then you just start hitting all these stretch goals. And before you know it, you're getting a ton of stuff for like $60.
Well, as Paul knows, I've done that a few times myself.
Have any of yours ever actually like shipped?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's one big one that I'm still waiting on. There was one that flamed out completely, but most come through. My only complaint is that I think that some sustaining companies continue to use this as their business model, whereas they shouldn't.
Right.
Because then you get caught up in the stretch goal fever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, maybe just put out a game.
Yeah.
And just the game.
Yeah, there's a number of presses that seem to just do it this way, and it just seems like, why are you doing this?
Right.
Why?
I mean,
it depends. Seven of Continent is hugely expensive to produce. Yes. I mean, those cards.
I can understand that, but like established companies doing this.
Yeah, I mean, GMT Games has this thing called the P500, where they put up a title. They say, we will print this when it hits 500 orders. And you can track it. And you don't get charged until it hits 500 and is in production. And that they've used that for more than 10 years now, maybe 20 years now. And it seems to be a viable alternative where if you're an ongoing concern, instead of doing this fever launch every month or so, just put it up as a P500 or whatever you want to call it.
The only thing I can think of is twofold. One, greed, or two, the production costs are such that they can't hold inventory on them. And it doesn't make sense to make one.
No. This is why the P500, you don't produce it until you have enough to make it worthwhile producing. I mean, Steve Jackson Games came out with Ogre, the reprint, as a Kickstarter. Now, I can see that they had an entirely new design. They wanted to make sure there was demand. But they've done like four or five Ogre Kickstarter since then. Why? You proved it once. It's an ongoing concern.
People Chaosium, will buy your product. Yeah.
Right. Chaosium brought out RuneQuest again as a Kickstarter because it had been out of print for a long time and nobody knew whether it would be really worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They originally were going to do the new edition as another Kickstarter, but realized that they had an audience, so they're just going with regular publication. So, I mean, you know, it's just weird how some companies just take this as, well, this is our business model.
Yeah.
And I, you know, at some point I suspect that you're going to get Kickstarter fatigue or Patreon fatigue or, you know, fill in your blank as far as what you want.
Yeah. I've had to cut myself off because I'm spending way too much money on Kickstarter.
Right.
And like Seventh Continent was my birthday present. So I backed that last October and got the game in April.
And happy birthday.
I know. And I'll get the, I'll get the expansion in October of this year. So again, happy birthday. But if you spend any time on that site, you will find cool things that you want and you'll back them and you don't realize that you've just backed 3-4 things.
Right. Yeah.
It's going to cost you several hundred dollars.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely something you got to kind of be careful with. I think a lot of people are just using that as their model. For me, Patreon is difficult when people are doing campaigns essentially like help me pay my bills. That's odd for me. I guess I don't know.
Well, I mean, I've helped out on those kinds of things as people may know with like
too.
Jay Lake.
It's just I don't know.
It's sad. It's a sad statement on society.
Yeah, it really is. I feel like we shouldn't have to go there to get help.
No.
Yeah. GoFundMe's for medical bills. Yeah, that's kind of an indictment of a larger societal problem.
Right.
Yeah. And painful. I mean, it's just so painful.
Patreon is all over the map. I mean, I've got one that I know of that charges you every month whether they do anything or not, which I think is, you know, okay for a while, but you got to produce something, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, most seem to produce, charge you depending on how many things they do each cycle, which is a better approach. But do you guys still use it, Patrick, or not?
Yeah, we still have it there. We need to restructure it because we're never going to hit any of the levels that we put on there. So, you know, we need to restructure it. And I've talked to Anelio about that. And we still use it and we still get money every month. And we use that towards our Zencaster and our Dropbox and our hosting. And I mean, it covers those.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, it's never going to get us to a convention, which is one of the things that we were hoping we would be able to get to. You know, the both of us actually be at the same convention at the same time, which we haven't done since
a long time.
Since World Fantasy 2009.
Right.
I want to say it's the last time John and Elio and I were at the same convention. I've been to more conventions at this point with Donardo than I have with Anelio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, no. So, you know, we're constantly talking. Oh, no, I take that back. We were at, we were guests of honor at Capricorn in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So we did it. We were able to go there. And that was basically because we were lamenting the fact on the podcast. And John Ickes, who was the con chair at the time or the concom, heard us and said to his con committee, hey, invite the Emotional Nerds to be our media guests of honor. And so that's how we got to go there. But yeah, you know, we've talked about how we'd love to be able to go to more conventions together. And I think if we restructured our Patreon, we might be able to do something like that.
Well, we've certainly gone far afield today.
Did you expect any less with me?
No. Or me or Jeff or Paul or John or, you know, we just like to ramble.
Yeah, so there's this great barbecue place.
Wait a minute. That's one of the top picks, Patrick. We're not allowed to talk about that.
On his podcast. We're allowed to talk about barbecue here. I don't care.
I'm still looking for some decent barbecue down here in Atlanta. So,
Is it old Georgia style there?
It's all over the place. You know, I'll tell you this. You know, the greatest tacos I've ever had in my life I've had in Atlanta. Some of the best Indian food. Halal Guys makes probably the best gyros that I've ever had. But yeah, barbecue has just been not impressed.
Have you gone to that place on 285?
Which place?
I'm making a joke about 285. Okay. Yeah. Because the only way to get anywhere in Atlanta is on 285.
Yeah, that's pretty much true.
Yeah. Well, final thoughts? Jeff? Go.
I don't do any gaming, so the last 10 minutes have just been nonsense to me. No, just glad we're glad to be back. That's all.
Paul?
I'm glad you guys are back. I have been parsimonious in backing Kickstarters. I mainly have to trust the person involved because I've been burned twin too many times. And it has to be something I really, really, really want. So I don't go trolling Kickstarter. But if I hear about something cool, I'll think, oh, maybe. Like, say, Alan Barr, Gallant Knight Games stuff. I most recently backed a Kickstarter from Ankh's Path for more Exalted stuff because, you know, I'm a sucker for Exalted. But other than that, I try to limit my Kickstartering as much as possible to stuff I really, 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 really want and really, really trust will actually come out. Mr. Kenneth Haidt being an example of someone I'll trust.
Mm-hmm.
Or Pelgrane Press. I mean, I've been burned too many times and seen the wreckage of things I've never gotten and money down the drain to go wild ever again.
Patrick?
Did File 770 ever come back up?
Yes. I know they're still moving hosts. That hasn't been done yet. I know they're having problems for a while before there.
Okay. I'm just curious.
Okay.
Was I supposed to come up with something else? Something,
yes, you were, Patrick.
Relevant, something, yeah. I don't know. You know, I'm...
Listen to Patrick on the Functional Nerds. There we go.
Go buy my book. Yes. I'm ridiculously happy that you guys are back and that you're podcasting again. I'm happy that Paul does so much podcasting that he does. And that the folks from SF Signal have continued, you know, the irregulars have continued to just soar and do great and wonderful things all across the internet and podcasting and writing articles and book blogging. And it's so great to see all of that continuing.
And I'll finish with good wishes to John Stevens, wherever you are. And John DiNardo, the bagel overlord.
There's a game I've seen that I want to buy for John DiNardo.
About bagels?
Nope. It's called That's What She Said.
I get that reference.
Yep. And on that note, take care until we return again.
Ciao.